people eating fast food used to ask,
"Where's the beef? Hey, where's the beef?"
Now burger eaters are asking, "Where's the plant-based meat alternative?"
What in the devil's name is this?
That may sound like a mouthful, but fast food chains like Burger King and Del Taco are going whole hog on vegan patties. Is fake meat the food of the future? We asked you.
Hi, this is John Wood from Detroit. Yeah, I've tried fake meat. I prefer just to eat vegetables, fried or cooked or raw.
My name is Lazaro Fernandez and I'm from Miami, Florida. I'm not a vegan or vegetarian, but whenever I see the Impossible Burger on a menu, I have to give it a try.
Tina Frankie, I'm calling from St. Louis, Missouri.
Mary from Safety Harbor, Florida.
I've been a vegetarian for over 15 years.
I'm a vegetarian.
And I've tried the Impossible Burger.
I have tried fake meat, the Impossible Burger.
And I love it.
I do not like it.
The fake food has too many ingredients for me. It always ends up tasting like a Doritos burger.
I gave up meat for a reason, because I don't want to eat meat.
I think it's a great alternative for red meat, and it's slowly but surely going to make its way into every city in America.
I also think it's going to eventually be an option, possibly to be considered to offset the environmental impact of large-scale factory farming.
Hungry yet? Well, let's talk about it. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Right now, the fake meat market is dominated by two companies, Impossible Foods and Beyond Meat. Each has its own secret sauce when it comes to creating burgers that are as meat-like as possible. Customers and investors are going ham over these new vegan options, and they're advertised as healthier and more environmentally friendly than beef, and they're seen by many as a cheaper way to cut back on meat in our diets. But the vegan feeding frenzy has some people questioning whether these animal-free burgers are really the solution to our public health crisis and climate change, or if this market is just a big plant-based bubble. Heather Haddon is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal covering food and restaurants, and Monica Burton is associate restaurant editor at Eater. Heather, Monica, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We got through all those food puns and we appreciate it. Monica, let's get some of the basics out of the way here. What exactly are these meat alternatives made out of? What makes them taste and feel like meat?
Yeah. So Impossible Foods and Beyond Burger have different formulas for their products. Impossible is a patty, but also a meat product that's primarily made out of soy protein. There's also some sunflower oil, some potato protein in there. But most importantly, what Impossible has is the heme molecule, which is found in real meat, and it's what makes meat taste like meat. And so Impossible Foods found a way to derive this molecule from yeast, and they put it in their burger, and it's what makes the burger bleed, and it's what gives it that Maillard reaction and makes it meat-like. Beyond, on the other hand, is made up of pea proteins, mung bean protein, rice proteins, canola oil, there's some potato starch, and it has some beet juice extract that gives it a pink color that makes it look like meat, but it does not have the heme.
So Heather, who is the target audience for these products? Is it meat eaters who are trying to stop eating meat but still like the experience of meat, or is it vegetarians? Like, who are they marketing this to?
So these companies say that they are really looking to cater to folks who eat meat. Impossible Foods is something that 96% of those who consume their products actually eat meat. So their goal is to try to sway people who love actual beef that these are real alternatives, that they taste similar enough that they are a worthwhile alternative for folks who want to cut down on meat.
And Heather, how does the price compare to beef?
So yeah, currently they are more expensive. So on average, current figures show that a meat burger costs about $3.50 in quick service, while these burgers cost about $5. If you get them in a finer dining restaurant, which is where these alternatives really started, the markup can be something like $4. So they currently are much more expensive. These companies say the prices will fall, but they are at a premium currently.
Monica, the big question is, I think, for a lot of folks is, are these alternatives actually healthier than traditional meat? I mean, are there any health drawbacks to these, given the list of ingredients that you just read us?
The companies that produce these burgers say that they are healthier. They're lower in cholesterol. I think that the one question that remains is the effects of genetically modified foods and processed foods. I think we know that whole foods are in general better, but when compared to a fast food burger, the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Burger are better for you.
Compared to just like your traditional,
mm-hmm. beef burger.
And the big question, Monica, is also a lot of folks are thinking, well, if I start eating these plant-based alternatives, this will help save the environment. Is that true?
The studies that the companies themselves have conducted show that it is true. Impossible says that one Impossible burger uses 96% less land, 87% less water, and 89% fewer emissions. And for Beyond, all of those metrics, it's around 90% or higher. So yes, they are better for the environment, and this is the mission that Impossible and Beyond are using to market their products.
Heather, let's talk a little bit about Impossible Foods and Beyond as companies here. How were they able to sort of really take hold of this market and rise to become the top two players here?
So a lot and lots of money. So investors have poured millions of dollars into both these companies with the intention that and hope that they would really take off and generate more mass market appeal than traditional veggie burgers. And so far that has been the case. So Beyond Meat, it had its IPO last month, and its stock price has gone from initial $25 a share. Last time I looked yesterday, it was at $140. So obviously that has done very well. Impossible still has not had an IPO, but has just raised hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. And they really need that money now, though. So one of the problems with these companies is there's so much demand that they have not been able to scale up quick enough to meet it. So there's been a lot of issues with supply, with shortages. They say that they are investing in their facilities, using that money right now to scale up. And then just one thing on the health aspect, these products do have a lot of sodium. They have a lot of fat. So they do not have meat, but some vegetarians really question whether they are healthier than just having a veggie burger or some kind of vegetable alternative.
Hmm. And also, we're seeing a lot of, we mentioned at the top that fast food chains are really starting to try to get a foothold into this market. Heather, I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about the strategy there from the fast food restaurant industry. Are they looking at this as a way to not lose consumers who are concerned about perhaps changing their diet, or is this a way to offer new alternatives to current consumers?
Yeah, it's really been quite sudden and remarkable when a big chain like Burger King tests this kind of product and finds it so successful that they decide to roll it out nationwide. You mentioned Del Taco. There's lots of other chains looking at this. White Castle was one of the first to use it. I mean, these are brands you wouldn't normally associate with a vegetarian alternative. But for these companies, they see this as a way to stay relevant. When I was talking to the White Castle executives, they say, you know, we want future generations to still eat our burgers, not just folks who maybe grew up with them and are nostalgic for them, but no longer will eat them in 10 years. But what we really have to see is this going to sustain? So some initial figures show that there was a huge surge of interest when Burger King first rolled this out in test markets in St. Louis. But the question is, will that remain? Will folks still continue to come and have these when some of the buzz has died down? We'll have to see.
And Monica, I'm wondering on from the restaurateur side of things and for the people who are actually making these burgers, what do they think about the meat alternative? Are they excited about it? Is it enjoyable to cook with these products?
There are a lot of chefs that are very excited about it. And Impossible, in particular, was very savvy in the way it rolled out its burger, in that it enlisted really big name chefs like David Chang and Tracy Desjardins and Michael Simon. And they, before giving it to grocery stores, before putting it in fast food restaurants, they gave it to chefs who used the product and said, I like this product. This is a good thing. And it basically trickled down from there.
Heather, do we know whether or not the average consumer is willing or interested in paying a premium for this type of food? So I'm wondering for mid to lower income Americans, are consumers interested in paying a premium for this?
So studies show that people are definitely interested in eating less meat. There's definitely a trend there where people are trying to reduce their beef and other kind of meat aspects of their diet. The question is, will they really follow through with that? It's one thing to tell someone conducting a survey they want to eat less meat, another thing to actually go to a chain restaurant and pay more for it. Now, currently, the chains are offering these products for a little bit more than an actual beef burger, so the hit isn't too bad. There's a lot of questions whether they're actually making money off this. It seems that they are absorbing some of the cost for now just to keep getting people in their doors and try these products. But I think long term, we probably won't see a huge influx of, you know, budget consumers trying these products, but they are, like I said, really proving to be a novelty right now and creating buzz for, you know, foodies and people who are sort of interested in avoiding meat.
You just mentioned whether or not this is going to move forward. I was going to ask both of you that question. I'm wondering, Monica, are we going to see plant-based pork chops or steaks or other forms of meat? We know that plant-based chicken alternatives are out there now. What do you see?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are companies working on fish as well.
Fish?
Yes.
Wow, okay.
So I think we're going to continue to see people in this space innovating because I think the market for these companies right now isn't vegetarians. It's people who eat meat and are maybe interested in reducing their environmental impact or being a little bit healthier. But they're not looking to go after the vegetarians. It's the meat eaters that they are trying to market to and get to make a lifestyle change and hopefully have a huge environmental impact.
Heather, we forgot to ask about one big player in all this, the meat industry. How are they reacting to this? Are they seeing, you know, we've got to now start doing less meat and more plant-based alternatives? What's the industry saying?
So the meat industry, the actual cattlemen who produce the beef, clearly are not happy with this. They are particularly upset about the labeling concerns, calling these alternatives meat when they say technically they really aren't meat and they want the FDA to enforce existing rules around this. But the actual meat companies like Tyson and some of the other meat giants themselves are actually investing in their own alternatives. They see this is something that they need to get into as well to compete for the long term. One other thing I think we should just briefly mention is the actual veggie burger companies, they are also trying to compete in this, including chicken, fish products, like you mentioned. So they don't want to lose market share either.
Well, we've been talking fake meat with Heather Haddon, reporter for The Wall Street Journal, covering food, retail, and policy, and Monica Burton, associate restaurant editor at Eater. Heather and Monica, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing.
Or politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.